scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right. It is Friday, September 6th, and we are underway this hour on Flames Talk. Welcome to it. Steinberg along with you from our Groundworks downtown studio on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. We got a busy hour, jam-packed hour for you ahead. It's a Friday, which means it's time for the Eric Francis Hour, brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. Take the short drive to Lacombe and check out live standard bred racing every weekend at Track On 2. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18 plus. Please play responsibly. Yes, Steinberg and Eric Francis from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. EF joining us on the program right now. Hello, Eric. How are we doing, my man?
I'm excellent, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing all right. It's been a heavy week, hey? It's been an unprecedented week. It's been a week that no one can ever prepare for. It's been a week, hasn't it? It's been one of those weeks where I think we'll all remember a lot of what has gone down this week and where we were when this happened or that happened, so on and so forth. It's been a heavy last 7 days.
But, you know, when people look back on it, and time heals, this one's so horrific, you know, I mean, it. But time heals bit by bit. And I think people in Calgary can look back and, hey, it's not about us. It's obviously about the Gaudreau family. But, you know, Calgary did itself so proud. Like, I was so proud of my city. I always am, but. You know, that turnout the other night, I estimated it to be around 10,000 people. Whatever the number was, it's just so hard to guesstimate, but it was a significant amount of people who came out and just, it was just such a stirring, incredible tribute. You know, there's obviously the funeral is going to be in Pennsylvania. It's not going to be here, but this was our version of, you know, saying goodbye and recognizing and all that, and chance for people to give speeches. And I just thought, you know, look, I don't work for the club, but I can tell you, like, they absolutely hit it out of the park. This organization does these things with such class. You know, these guys, Jordy and all these guys who behind the scenes are making that thing go the other night. The idea of a candlelight vigil is fantastic. The execution was incredible. Every detail was so perfect. There were washrooms put out there for people, to the point where also they had thousands of little cups with whatever that syrup is that kind of attracts wasps. You know, obviously we got this big wasp problem right now. They had them all over the place to try and, you know, help with the wasp issue. Like, just every little detail was perfect. I thought the speakers were the four, you know, it was just on the mark.
Yeah.
What they said was heartfelt. I love that Lanny threw something in there about, you know, one of the obvious issues, which is drinking and driving. And I love that he, you know, kind of reminded people that's got to be one of the takeaways in all this. And I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you agree that it was just the setup also where you had the people, like all the fans, looking up at all the this city's, you know, the staffers, but also the heroes that people idolize, these players. They're all wearing 13 jerseys. They're with their wives in a lot of cases. All the staff members that were invited to come and be a part of it. Some of them brought their sons and daughters. Like, I just thought that's how you heal. They're looking at each other for 13 minutes of complete silence. And it was just perfect that, like, all you could hear was sniffling, the odd person kind of crying or sobbing, and the whir of a drone over top.
Yep.
It was dead silent. It was beautiful. I mean, you tell me, is there anything that they missed?
No,
I don't think so.
It was they they're not looking for accolades for something like this, but
no,
I think the Flames should be extremely proud of what they put together on Wednesday. I think Michael Backlund and Craig Conroy and Lanny McDonald should all be very proud of getting through what they had to get through and how difficult that was for them to get through. I think that every Flames fan who showed up and every Flames fan who watched online, I think you should be proud and feel like, look, I don't know how much this is contributing to the Gaudreau family working through an immeasurable loss. It's only been a week. This time heals, but a week doesn't heal. But, you know, I hope in a year's time or 10 years time or 20 years time, the Gaudreau family can look back and say that what they saw and the outpouring of emotion in this city, if it helps even 0.01%, then it was all worth it. And I can't imagine it only helps that much. I mean, at some point right now, yeah, it's pretty raw. But you know what? The outpouring of support and knowing that there were thousands upon thousands of Flames fans who were feeling the pain and sending good vibes the other way, like that stuff makes a difference, man. And so I think everybody who watched, attended, was part of it, put it on, everything just hit the perfect note for such a tragedy. And I'm completely with you. I don't think there was one foot misplaced from George Kanyon to the 13 minutes to the speeches,
the bagpipes,
the Amazing Grace, the candlelight and, you know, the timing and how it started light and ended. Everything was perfect and hit every note perfectly. And I thought was the exact thing that everything they did was the best you can do in a situation like this. There's only so much you can do, right? And I think that so much was absolutely attained the entire way through and has been the entire week.
You know, I do think it's important. You know, this is a player who decided not to come back here. And I know it was an agonizing decision for him, and I'm not criticizing him for it. I never have. I've always said, you know, family comes first, and guys have the choice. They, you know, and we all know it's well documented. He agonized over it, and because he knew how great it was here, he knew how good the people were and how great the organization was first class and what his legacy would have been here and all that. But, you know, people were hurt when Johnny Gaudreau left. Some were furious, some were frustrated, some were just sad, whatever the case is. But the way I put it now is, you know, people were hurt then, but they're really hurting now. And it, you know, obviously it's better than it was a week ago when the news was extremely raw. But listen, we've heard from Johnny's wife. We've heard from one of the sisters via social media where they have said, like, wow, you know, we're noticing this, we're thankful for it, and it is helping. So it can't not help you. And I do understand, it is my understanding that at some point, you know the Gaudreau family is going to come out here.
Yeah, for sure.
And there's going to be some sort of, you know, we'll debate for another day whether, you know, they come out here to so that his numbers retire. That's a debate that's going on. Or whatever it is, the Flames have already found the right notes to hit, and they'll do it again, and the family will come out here. It's my full belief. You know, it's going to take time, no question about it, but when they're comfortable and ready, they're going to come out here in a way to kind of thank this city, you know, and the city's going to be able to wrap their arms around them once again, and that's going to be powerful as well, and the Flames are going to do it the right way. Like, you look back at the Kiprusoff ceremony, the Iginla ceremony. Not everybody gets these right. You look at some other cities, and I'm not some other cities, they go way too long. They go too short. They don't hit all the right notes. They don't get all the right speakers. That's not the case here. This has been first class.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny you bring up the decision in 2022, where as you mentioned, I mean, John and the family, Meredith and everybody agonized over whether or not it was the right call for him to remain here or not remain here. And as we know, he signed in Columbus for that 7-year deal. But again, I think it's so important to point out that decision. And I don't know if you remember our chat from last week, cause I barely remember anything from Friday because we were all in such a fog, but one of the points that you brought up was the fact that Guy Gaudreau, Johnny's dad, saw every home game over two seasons in Columbus, something that was just not possible when Johnny was here. And that speaks in and of itself why that move to Columbus meant so much to John and meant so much to the family, and why it was the right call. As hurt as people were in this city, I think in hindsight, especially now in hindsight, tragic hindsight, you're like, yeah, that's what it was all about for Johnny. It was about playing and it was about family. And he got to mesh those two things better by going to Columbus, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not for us to decide whether it was a mistake or not. And I certainly think fans around the league would look at it and have various opinions on whether or not he made a mistake in their eyes. But it's really, you're right, it's really only up to the family to decide. And I bet you even internally in that family, not everyone agrees that it was either the right or wrong move. I honestly tell you that I don't think everyone would have universally agreed, yeah, that was the right move to move closer to home. It doesn't matter. It's not up for us to decide. It was up for Johnny and Meredith to decide, and them alone. And they made the decision, and Johnny was happy. At the end of the day, he was happy. So, you know, nobody's opinion matters other than his. But it is just so, again, going back to it, it's so powerful to me that this is a city that, you know, felt rejected at one point. And it kind of did kickstart a massive overhaul in this organization when Johnny decided to leave. And you know, I think people would have the right to be a little frustrated over that, or sad or angry, like I said. But all that's just hockey stuff. And at the end of the day, real life stuff just happened. And it's awful. And at the end of the day, we're all human beings ahead of being hockey fans. And the human being part of it all was just so incredible. It's incredibly touching to watch. I brought my son. He wanted to go, and I was happy to bring him. And, you know, my son's never really dealt with these sort of issues in his life. He's only 14, and luckily we haven't had to deal with stuff like this before. And, you know, I'm glad he went, and I'm glad there are a lot of people there who are probably in the same boat as my son. My son had tears in his eyes, and many, many people did. I used the term sea of red eyes. Hmm. That's what it was, a sea of red eyes. And that's okay. It's okay for everyone to come out and grieve together, because that's what a community does.
And as you wrote at sportsnet.ca earlier this week, not surprising, right? Like that's kind of what this city is all about and has always done. You know, as soon as I saw the first images, Eric, of people leaving things on, I guess that'd be the west steps of the Scotiabank Saddle Dome, as soon as I saw that for the first time, it just kind of hit home that thing is going to become massive. Like that is going to turn into what it's turned into, because you're just, that's when things like this happen, things like these happen, and you've been in this city for decades. I've been in this city for decades. Look, there's political divisions. There's disagreements over what should be built and where public money should go, all those things. And they're valid disagreements and discussions. But when serious things happen, when real life happens, when tragedy happens, I've always been amazed at how this city rallies around things, whether it's 2,000 kilometers away, whether it's somebody in this city, it really is, has always been that way, hasn't it?
It really has. And listen, it's not like we're the only city in the world. Listen, Columbus had a pretty good gathering too the other night as well. Like, but, and I'm not, if something similar, you know, God help us all, ever happened in Toronto or any other city, I'm not saying there wouldn't be this incredible outpouring of support. We're all human beings, and we all, you know, want to grieve together at times like these. I just think that Calgary does it better than most. The sense of community. Listen, here's another thing that I was thinking of after I wrote my column the other night was, like, just how perfectly appropriate it was that monument, you know, it was fans who decided to put it there. And maybe logically that's really the best and only place to put it around the dome. I mean, you could put it under the goalie mask, you know, the first bunch of flowers or something, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, but they chose the stairs, which is not normally where a lot of people, I don't know, enter the building. I guess many do. But my point is, right there is where the Stampede is. Like, that's Stampede grounds. that's where this city comes together better than anybody in Canada during Stampede every year. And I just thought, how perfect that this is a place where we come to celebrate our heritage and our city every year for 10 days. And it's also a place where on this one night that no one will ever forget who was there, we came to grieve together in the same spot. And I just think that's so damn Calgary. I'm over the top proud of my city, always have been. And that night almost gave me goosebumps just thinking about how wonderful it was that people came to support the Gaudreaus 3,000 kilometers away.
Well said. And you know, the whole, this whole week, you know, you've been in this industry a long time, my friend, and I'm closing in on being in this industry a long time. And look, we've all dealt with prominent sports figures passing, some in a shocking manner, some in a manner where it just, you know, naturally life comes to an end. That's, death is part of life. We know that. And yet this one has felt so completely unprecedented and so completely without a script, hasn't it? Like this really has been unlike anything that we've ever really been a part of. And obviously we wish this was never the case. We wish that vigil never had to happen on Wednesday. But when something is as unscripted, and when you don't have a blueprint for it, it really does, I think, bring out the true character of a lot of people. And I think that's exactly what we've seen here, whether it be here, Columbus, or elsewhere, since the news started to become a reality on Thursday night of last week.
Yeah, I mean, that memorial was completely organic. And hey, listen, when tragedies happen all over the world, you often see people go to lay flowers somewhere or some memorabilia or something to kind of honor the lost life or lives. But this was, it was unscripted. I think to your, you know, kind of what you said, I certainly have, in 30 years of the business, have never covered a story this horrific, you know, and I don't mean to diminish other things that I've covered, but, you know, this was awful. I remember years ago going to cover, Payne Stewart, his funeral and the tournament after that and all that. And that hit a lot of people, but not it, like in a totally different way. I mean, it's not like a lot of people around, like, felt like they knew him. In Calgary, everybody felt like they knew Johnny Gaudreau. He was one of ours. He was us. Everybody has a story about running into him at a Max Milk or buying a bag of Skittles next to him or something. Right. You know, another thing I keep noticing around town, especially during the vigil, like, obviously, number 13 jerseys are probably amongst, you know, in today's era, they're probably second only to what, Jerome jerseys that you would see around town.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, it's interesting to kind of look at that. But like the jerseys that I saw at that vigil, I just was struck by, and I started pointing it out to my son, like, look, that one's signed. That one's signed. That one's signed. That one's signed. Like, he goes and signs a million jerseys over the years, but like, it just seemed like everybody at some point must have met him somewhere while they're wearing their jersey. I just was struck by how many people he's like touched, you know, by actually giving them his autograph. So yeah, he was one of ours, always will be. And, you know, I think I don't want to do it now, but I do want to set the table for the fact that in due time, you and I will have a good solid half hour or hour long discussion. We'll get the people to write in as well on the text line about whether his number should be retired, because, you know, and I don't really want to shed any light on where I'm standing on that right now, but I think obviously when it first happened, a lot of people, it was one of the first reactions. And then as time goes on, I think people are thinking about it a little differently, but that's a story for another day and a debate, because I do think it's a good one. There's no right or wrong on that one either, but it is something that a lot of people are talking about. Like, that's one of the most prominent messages scrawled on the stairs right in front of where the players and everybody stood the other night.
Yeah.
Is retire. It said, retire number 13, please, with 2 exclamation marks in orange chalk. And I do think that speaks for a ton of people around this city.
Yeah. And we see it, nonstop on our text line. You're right. Now's not the time for that conversation.
No, I don't think
so. But I do think, I think it would be a really interesting conversation when it is time for that. And the last thing that I'd say, EF, before we pivot and have a pause, we're going to bring on NHL player agent Rich Winter from Rays Sports. He's going to join us here a little bit later on this hour. But the last thing I'd say is I know that this, whether you're a staffer at the Saddle Dome, part of hockey ops, whether you're a fan who met Johnny once, or you're a parent whose kids are devastated by this, or whatever the case may be, all the different ways that something like this can affect a person, and it has affected many in a pretty profound way. Like I have friends, like I've never met Johnny, and I haven't been able to sleep all week. Like this is a thing. Like last thing that I would say is, I don't know. It's okay to not be okay when these things happen. Like it's okay to be in a bad spot. It doesn't mean that you're weak. Doesn't mean that you're like, it's just like, it's okay to be not okay when something this shocking and this tragic happens.
Absolutely. And look, there's no shame in shedding tears. I mean, we're human. And I was actually, I guess I shouldn't have been surprised, because that's not the word, but I was struck by how many people I did see, like during the 13 minutes of silence. Like, I'm not kidding when I said the only things you could hear were people sobbing or crying or sniffling. That was it. And there was a lot of it. Like it was, you know, people who I, you know, whether they just met him once for 20 seconds or they never met him at all, but that's how, you know, hurt people are by this. And, you know, it's the family that you really feel for, right? I mean, everybody involved is just, I know I had trouble sleeping for the first couple nights, to be honest.
Yeah. And, oh, absolutely.
And it was because I just kept thinking of the parents and the wife and the sisters and the brother, but you know, obviously the brother's tragedy is terrible. All of it is, we don't have to keep going over it. I mean, we'll turn the page here after the break, but it's just amazing how, this was just as awful as any story I've ever, you know, kind of covered. So I hope and pray I'm never involved in anything close to this ever again.
Yeah. Well said. And I know this, the universally, like whether we've had Craig Conroy on or Brad Treliving earlier this week, or when Brendan Parker was on with us earlier, anytime you start talking about the family and that, and the parents and the sisters, every time that's when, you know, when Bax was talking about it on the steps, that's every time is when that's when it really catches people, and that's when it's hardest to keep it together. And I think you can understand why. Eric Francis with us. It's Pat Steinberg as well. This is the Eric Francis Hour here on Flames Talk. The Eric Francis Hour brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. Take the short drive to Lacombe and check out live standardbred racing every weekend at Track on 2. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18 plus. Please play responsibly.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Continuing along on this Friday, it is Steinberg and Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. It's the Eric Francis Hour for Horse Racing Alberta. Hopefully your Friday is going along well. Very happy to welcome in our next guest. We are a little less than 2 weeks away from the beginning of NHL training camps, and we're moving closer and closer to the start of the regular season as well. So what happens at this time of year for NHL player agents? Let's try to answer that question with Rich Winter, certified NHL player agent from Rays Sports, based right here in Alberta. Rich joins us on the program right now. Rich, a pleasure. It's Pat and Eric. How are we doing on this Friday?
Well, I'm sitting on my deck watching the boats go by, about to go to a movie that my wife would never attend with me, and she's out of town with my daughter. So I'm doing what sports agents do this time of year, trying to figure out how to fill the gaps between the calls, because they're few and far between. And basically, we're fighting for that last opportunity for two or three clients. And this really is the most important part of the season, guys, and this is where I think agents earn their money, because whether Leon Draisaitl gets 14 or 14.5 is basically irrelevant in his life. But if Adam Ernie or Rocco Grimaldi don't get a job, they're looking at 600-700 or zero. And you know, there's some of these players, Adam has three young children under the age of four. you can imagine that he and his wife are pretty nervous. And so we, that weighs pretty heavily on all of us. So it's a difficult time, but it's as dull as it is boring, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, so you say this is kind of the time when agents really make their money and such a busy time. So I guess bring us behind the scenes, Rich. Like, what's going on right now? How are you trying to make these things happen? Tell us about what makes this such a crucial and busy time.
Well, I mean, I think what first you're trying to do is find the spots. I mean, there just are many clubs who've filled up everything from PTOs to their roster, and trying to find a spot, stay on top of things. I have a goalie yet to get signed, and I had three calls this week because three different teams had injuries, and they all passed in the end, but you stay on top of that. And then it's trying to position your player with enough information, maybe they'll look at it differently. I'm always telling guys, I have 47 All-Star Game appearances, 6 Vezinas, 2 League MVP Hart trophies, 4 Conn Smythe trophies, a Norris trophy, and 85 Stanley Cup champion rings from guys who were waived, bought out, or never drafted. And of course, one of those is Gio for the Norris trophy. So, you know, I think I have a decent reputation and, you know, with these guys that, yeah, they're listening to me. I mean, there have been times Stan Bowman tells me finally he listened to me at the end of the summer, 1 year just prior to the lockout, signed Michael Roosevelt against the recommendation of his scouts because I guess I hit a nerve. Rosie went on to win 2 Stanley Cups, and Stan will tell you if I didn't go against the advice of my staff, and he uses this as an example all the time when he was in Chicago, we don't win that cup. Because when Duncan Keith goes down, Rosie steps up from the third pair, plays one of his better games in years, and they don't even miss him, go back to Chicago ahead 3-2, and they end up winning the cup again. So just trying to change people's biases, change the way they look at things. I know my players very well. I think I sell them for what they are versus trying to sell sheep or, you know, snake oil, because if you sell snake oil once, they won't listen to you again. And keep in mind, the guys I'm talking to cannot know my players as well as I do. So, you know, they're looking at 1,600 players. They heard something 5 years ago about a player. He's got a cancer in the room or this, that, and the other. And you're just trying to overcome that. I look at a guy like Adam Ernie. I think he's a capable third line player in Detroit. 3 years ago, he was their leading goal scorer, played on the second line, second power play unit, first penalty kill unit. New coach comes in, doesn't like that flavor. So he doesn't get much ice time. Ends up put on waivers, clears, comes into Edmonton last year. Ken Holland guarantees him an opportunity. He wins the job here. The team goes 0-1,000 out of the gate. They play the studs 35 minutes a night. There's no room for the fourth line to prove anything. Now, here's a guy who's 2 years removed from leading an NHL team in scoring, and I'm having trouble securing a PTO for him. Not because he's not a good player, but because, like Barry Trotz told me the other day, you know, whether you like it or not, Rich, once a guy clears waivers, we start to look at him like an American Hockey League player. Well, Dom Hašek cleared waivers twice in one season, won the Hart Trophy and the Vezina the following season. They don't always see players for what they are. So this is really a bias convention, trying to eliminate the biases these players, these coaches and GMs have, and see if you can find that opportunity. Because I always tell players, guys, that there's two things in every contract. There's money and opportunity. And I'll always chase opportunity. If my, you know, hopefully my players will take my advice, because opportunity always leads to what? Money.
Yeah.
So, you know, and so often we see players chase the money and they're miserable. They're not playing. It didn't work out right. I mean, everybody, if you play long enough in this league, you make a lot of money. But I can tell you, all those guys that won all those trophies and all those Stanley Cup rings were given up for dead. You know, Mark Giordano never drafted by anybody over the course of 2 full drafts. You know, they're not always that capable, and they're only drafting. You have to understand, like, what other business would we accept about a 20% success rate? They're drafting NHL players at a rate of about 20%. So 2 out of the 10 picks they select make it. Yet they'll miss about 15 to 20, maybe as many as 30 core players that were available when they were selecting. So you just got to accept that, yeah, maybe sometimes you look at it and think, am I seeing this right? Like, is this guy this flopping all over the place? Can he actually stop the puck? I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I don't think so. And then Buffalo trades for him. He won 6 Vezinas and 2 MVPs.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's maybe the best player in the history of the game at that position. How does he clear twice? They could have had him for $2,500.
Yeah. Yeah. We're chatting with Rich Winter, certified NHLPA player agent, Rays Sports, joining us here on the Eric Francis Hour. It's Pat Steinberg along with you and Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. Eric.
Okay, Rich, you brought up Gio. He's turning 41 on October 3rd. Still wants to play hockey. Give us the update on where he's at, who you're talking to, who's talking to him, and whether you think we'll see him back on the ice again this year.
Yeah, I think we will. I think, you know, that's you mentioned the 4-0 or the 4-1, and that's a bias. I mean, people are wondering, can he still play? They like him. He's only, you know, a few years removed from a Norris Trophy. Gio's in great shape. He's gone back to train with a group of trainers that he used when he won the Norris Trophy. He's feeling really good. I mean, he was the third best defenseman on the Leafs in plus minus last year, only playing half a season. If you continue to that pace for a full season, he'd been second. He was third in even strength points per minute played by defenseman on Toronto. So he's fine. He's in good shape. He's feeling good. We're talking to a lot of teams. He's looking to win. You know, even Gio doesn't think he has 10 years left, so they want to try and win. And there's two ways of going about that: sign with a team like Calgary that has no chance of making the playoffs, and be moved to the perfect spot at the trade deadline, and maybe that non-playoff team gets a little asset for having you and gets the benefit of having you mentor your kids and leave a mark on those kids that may be beneficial for years. Or talk to, you know, we've talked to Edmonton and Toronto, and Toronto's still not sure what's happening with Hawk and Paul. And Gio's been very patient. Like, you know, I can tell you, when we negotiated contracts, I couldn't get him off the phone. He's calling me all the time, but he's been frighteningly calm, and he recognizes that the best spot might be 2 weeks into camp, because we're at that time of year where all the kids there, they look great. You know, I'm pretty excited about seeing what, you know, so-and-so can do. And then they find out, wow, we missed the mark on that. So I think, you know, Gio's holding firm until he finds an opportunity that gives him a high probability of being in that Stanley Cup final. And obviously Edmonton's a good place. I mean, Stan Bowman, to go back to the Michael Roseville story, I told Stan right off the bat, Rosie number two, man. Somebody goes down one or two games, third, fourth round, Gio will have the experience to step in and be the Michael Roosevelt, fill that hole for a game or two. He might be the difference. I think Stan's buying it, but they've got 7 defensemen. They're toying around. Some think they should have an extra one in case they get injured, because there's no depth with CeCe and Broberg gone. But that's a decision that ends up getting made as they're, you know, facing the music when camp starts, you know, starts, and they now actually have to look at their depth. And in many cases, they're going to go, oh my gosh, you know?
Yeah. So you mentioned teams that you've been speaking to about the possibility. How does that discussion go? I know you've spoken to the Calgary Flames about the potential of bringing them here. What's the argument? What's the pitch? Give me the elevator pitch on why the Calgary Flames would be very, you know, interested in potentially bringing him along.
Well, Gio's a very bright guy. In fact, when Daryl Sutter called him, he was on the way to start enroll in business school before he got that opportunity for a PTO. He's going to get some business education. He's going to be the president of hockey operations at some point. That's sort of a strategy that he's cultivated and we're working on together. And my pitch to them was, look, I really think the Calgary Flames started falling apart when Brad Treliving refused to protect his captain. And I think that was significant, because you talk of the players, that room changed. No one went out for pregame skate because Gio wasn't going out. No one seemed to have the same focus as they did when Gio was around. And I thought this, you know, I'm a romantic to some degree, and I thought, gee, maybe Gio coming back, mentoring the kids, getting to know the kids very well from inside the room, and then maybe making the transition into management, having a very full and robust understanding of these players' strengths and weaknesses, that could be an ideal opportunity for them to reunite the three captains, you know, Connie, Jerome, and Gio in a management team. That's exciting. And I think it would say something about Calgary. So that would be a team you'd go to and expect by the trade deadline to be moved. But, you know, it wasn't something that we really pushed hard, and it didn't seem that Craig Conroy had much interest in it. I think he missed the mark. I would tell him that if he was on the phone with us. And I think it was a real opportunity to do something unique that I think could help. What better player do you know than Gio to be an example to a bunch of young kids about what it takes to prepare and be an elite NHL player? They don't have anybody in Calgary that walks in the room with cachet anymore. They don't have that, you know. They had that with Matthew, a little different personality, obviously. They had it to some degree, or certainly had it with Gio, and they had it with Markstrom. They had those guys in the room that were revered, and I just thought it'd be a good fit. And, you know, when the pitch is different, same in, you know, in Buffalo, who we're talking to, you know, they've got young kids. He could benefit. They're a little worried that, you know, at his, with his pedigree, will he be happy with the ice time? Will he be happy if he's a part-time player? So there are a lot of those kind of discussions going on. And ultimately, Gio has to make a decision as to what will help him accomplish his goals. I said to him, you know, around the Mangiapane wedding, I just said, you know what? We converted a trip into Moscow into a Norris Trophy. You became one of the higher paid players in the history of the franchise at that time. The last goal in the hat trick is a Stanley Cup. You do your job. I'll work on mine and see if we can get there. It was a lot of fun, believe me, to sit in Las Vegas and watch Gio accept the Norris Trophy after all the work we've done together. And it'd be even more fulfilling to see him on the ice toting that Stanley Cup around. And that's the goal for this season. Whether we achieve it or not, time will tell.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned, you've got, well, I'll go a couple different places. One, you mentioned Andrew Mangiapane's wedding. And I just want to go there for a second, if you could, because he's your client. He was moved. Yeah. He didn't expect to be moved. Can you just tell us, I mean, we'll talk to Andrew, of course, in due time, and we've already spoken to him, I guess, to a degree, but what's his mindset in, you know, going into Washington in a completely new ballgame for him?
Well, I mean, the coaching staff so poorly mishandled him, it can't be anything but be excited. It's hard to believe, but if you look at power play ice time per game among the Calgary Flames forward last year, you'd be surprised to learn that Andrew was 11th behind Adam Rzeczka. But what's even more amazing, you can't even imagine who was 12th, Blake Coleman. So it just, there was, you know, Andrew, I don't, you know, he would admit he could have perhaps performed at a higher level, but he didn't get much opportunity. You know, we all know that if you can't score on the power play in this league, you know, 30 goals is hard. He did it once without very much power play, but it's hard to do it twice. So I think what he's, you know, from talking to him, he's just excited about the fact that he's going to get an opportunity, maybe on the power play with guys like Ovechkin. Playoff team last year, looks a little better this year. We'll see. It's a breath of fresh air. You know, he's looking at new houses and new neighborhoods to rent. He's getting his cars figured out, getting his new bride settled in. It's new and it's exciting. And we'll see how it goes. But his time was up here. And I just watched with shock last year to see how Blake, you know, the best line in the National Hockey League, a complete line on a, you know, 200-foot basis was probably the backline line. Yet the backline line never saw the light of day on the power play. So they can score while checking the other team's best lines, but were never given an opportunity to score up a player. It makes no sense. And so it's one of those things. It's why the 47 guys I mentioned earlier ended up doing so well somewhere else, because someone didn't give him the opportunity. So I think Andrews looks to be likely to get the opportunity he didn't get the last 2 years. He scores 35 goals and he's basically he's not even a consideration on the power play. It just never made sense to me.
Yeah, but he never asked for a trade, or did he contemplate asking for a trade out of Calgary, you know, due to the frustration you just cited?
Well, he made it clear he wasn't happy here. But Andrew, you know him pretty well, Eric. He's a very compliant guy. He's a very understated guy. He's not the kind of guy like, you know, a Matty Tkachuk that'll walk into the room and flip the table over. Andrew, if Andrew was really mad, he might say something like, well, you know, I'm not that happy. You know him.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, he made it clear he wasn't happy. But, you know, the trade came It didn't come as a result of a trade request.
Yeah, good. No, because I remember when I spoke to you and him, and this caught you all off guard completely. But I think in light of what you just said, and I think we all understand, it was a welcome change, and he's certainly going to, you know, embrace the new opportunity. Can you go? We're talking to Rich Winter, player agent for Mark Giordano, for Andrew Mangiapane, and a whole cache of other players. I just wanted to ask you about the Mangiapane wedding, because it did come up the other night from Michael Backlund at that brilliant candlelight vigil for the Gaudreau brothers. Did you see Johnny Gaudreau there? I mean, I'm not trying to dig into anything that can't be shared, but did you have a conversation with him? Do you remember? You must remember something from that night in light of what's happened.
Oh, just watching them dancing and, you know, having fun, and, you know, a bunch of young men and women who played together, worked hard together, were living life together. And, you know, I didn't know Johnny that well. I've said hi to him and had brief conversations over the years, but not much. But just mind-boggling seeing him carry his young son. And it's hard for me because I lost my dad when I was 7. And I know what it's like to go out, live life without a dad. And I think the thing that hit me the hardest, I know what those young kids are going to go through. It's not fair to them. It's sad. The whole thing is horrific, sad beyond belief, but it's a sadness, unfortunately, that will never dissipate. One, because a mom can never forget her little boys. And two, because these young men and those around them will forever be telling them stories about their dad. And that being at that wedding was just, you know, made it even closer. I think we all feel close to Johnny because we're part of this hockey family. I guess he was the matriarch, Johnny Hockey, to some degree. And we feel it for that reason, but I'm sure you're feeling it, Eric, more. You've been with him. You know what kind of a guy he is. He seemed to be a sweet and kind of guy as you can meet, a little bit reserved. It's just incredibly sad. And the wedding made it just a further reminder. I've seen the picture as clear as it is, Johnny holding court in the middle of the dance floor with all his friends. Yeah. Not a happy time for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Rich, I thank you. Thanks for your thoughts. Sorry to end it on a tough note, but I appreciate your insights, and we thank you for joining the show. We all felt it in different ways when this tragedy hit. So,
well, it's just a reminder, Eric.
Good luck.
Yeah, just a reminder quickly, Eric, that they're all husbands and fathers and brothers. They're not just hockey players, and that's something we should never forget when we're interacting with them. So, yeah, have a good weekend. Sad note, but, you know, hopefully everybody will help console that family over the course of Monday and get them somewhat back on their feet.
Thanks, Rich. Really appreciate the time today. Hey, thanks for joining us.
Okay, guys, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
That's Rich Winter of Rays Sports, NHLPA certified player agent, Mark Giordano, Adam Ernie, Andrew Mangiapane, and more joining us here on the Eric Francis Hour on Sportsnet 960, The Fan, here on Flames Talk. Yeah, somber way to wrap it up, and that is kind of the overarching thing that's on everybody's minds right now. And the interesting side note on that, Eric, is the Mark Giordano conversation, and you know what this might end up looking like for Gio as he tries to find himself a new place to play, whether it's Toronto or elsewhere. Gio, who, as you mentioned, turns 41 on the 3rd of October, he's still very much interested in playing this year.
And how interesting that one of the teams he said that they've been speaking to were the Edmonton Oilers. I don't think Giordano could have ever fathomed that at any point in his career that he would ever, not that it's, you know, there's an option there at this point in time, but, you know, you never know. And that would certainly be strange for Flames fans to see their longtime captain play for the Oilers.
Yeah. You know, maybe let's appeal to Rich to anyone but Edmonton, hey?
yeah, that's fair.
We all understood when he went to Toronto. There's not a lot of love lost for Toronto here in this city. We understand that. But That's his hometown. We all understood that one, but not Edmonton. Yeah. Come on, Rich, not Edmonton.
Hey, it's not just up to Rich, right? It's up to Giordano.
Sure.
It's up to all these, you know, these potential suitors for him too. But I thought that was an interesting update. I wanted to have him on because Rich is always insightful to talk to, and you know, because of his connections with Mangiapane, with Giordano, I know that he's often got a lot of really good information for Flames fans.
Yeah.
So I'm glad he came and shared that with us.
It's been a tough week, my man. I know that. I know it's been an emotional week for everybody. Spent some time with the fam this weekend. Hey, we will, I'm excited to see you in the Okanagan where we can, continue to forge our bond. But for now, have a great weekend, pal.
You too, my man. Have a great weekend.
That's Eric Francis. That'll start to wrap us up this hour on the Eric Francis Hour. Thanks to Rich Winter of Ray Sports for joining us. And again, as I said, to wrap up the earlier hour on this Friday, thanks to all of you for being along with us for what's been an incredibly difficult week for all of us, whether you're doing radio or doing podcasts or writing or not involved in hockey or media or any of it's been a hard week for everybody. It's been a hard week inside those Flames offices. It's been a hard week for Johnny's former teammates. It's been a hard week for the Blue Jackets. It's been a hard week for the hockey world. And it's been a hard week for hockey fans. And just even if you're not a massive hockey fan, the story of what happened last Thursday night just hit everybody like a ton of bricks. So thanks for, I can say this for me, I'm sure I can speak on Eric's behalf as well. Thanks for helping us get through it with your texts and your words of support. Hopefully we've been able to help you in some small way as well. That'll wrap us up on this week's Eric Francis Hour. It's brought to you, as always, by Horse Racing Alberta. Take the short drive to Lacombe and check out live standardbred racing every weekend at Track On 2. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18+. Please play responsibly.